Brian, my man, what's going on? How you doing? You just tell me you were getting some, you were getting like a 3-foot shank pulled out of your neck or something. What were you just saying?
Yeah, a 3-foot piece of glass just jabbed into my neck, and I've had it there for the last 6 weeks, and finally just decided, you know, it's 3-foot shank of glass is kind of annoying. I should probably get rid of it. So I got some surgery on my neck and 3-foot glasses out.
Cool.
No, the real story is that from my bike accident in mid-July, whenever they cleaned me up and sutured my wounds, they apparently missed a teeny pebble sized piece of glass in my neck. And as my skin healed it around the glass. And I had this bump on my neck. And then eventually I just kind of started peeling at it myself and was advised that that was probably a bad idea, which I internalized and understood why, you know, picking at your own neck is probably a bad idea. Decided to go to the ER and have them take out the glass for me. And so I did that yesterday, and I feel free now of the glass.
Are you good? It was just like quick minor. They didn't like, and no anesthesia, nothing.
No. I mean, literally it was like almost at the surface at this point, 'cause I'd been picking at it. And so you could see the light reflect off of the glass, like in my neck. There was like this teeny little pebble sized piece, and you could see light reflect off of it. The doctor was literally like, wow, you weren't kidding. Like, you really can see the light reflect off of it. And so he just took like a little scalpel and kind of cut around it and in small little cuts until he could get underneath it and kind of like pop it up.
Yeah, it's never good. Doc's like, wow, man, you were right, man. This shit looks crazy.
Yeah.
Cool. Anything else going on? You're in peak bike season. You're trying to match my freak with the how low can we bring the volume? Give people a little bit about what you're up to.
Yeah, so I've been sort of romanticizing my early days of training back in like the late 90s when I was part of the Hard Gainer Forum, and they promote this more abbreviated style of training, like 2 to 3 full body workouts a week, big compound movements, mostly the big hitters, most sets like close to failure, that sort of stuff. And as I got further and further into bike season, I kept kind of trimming my volume down a little, but still doing kind of some of these more biomechanically specific exercises, if you want to put it that way, really trying to isolate specific muscle tissues and things like that. And I realized that my volume was so low at one point that I was like, why don't I just go back to doing what I used to do? I can do even less volume because compound movements are going to hit the majority of muscle groups across the board. I don't have to worry about isolating this or specifically targeting that or whatever. And I designed a 4-rotation full body program. So 4 different iterations of full body that I would do twice a week. So every 2 weeks, I would get back to the same workout again. And it's basically a push movement, a pull movement, a leg or hip movement, and some sort of isolation movement, whether it's lateral delts or arms or something like that. So I've been doing that now. I just am about to do my 4th workout in the rotation, so I'll have completed all of them. And so far, so good. I love it. I'm staying motivated to train because it's so nice to only train every 3 or 4 days. It's like I'm raring to go every single session. And I've been surprisingly sore from my workouts, like considering I'm only doing 2 sets of a push or 2 sets of a pull. It's kind of weird to be like, I'm actually sore in my chest or in my back or whatever. And then my legs too, like 2 sets of squats or 2 sets of RDLs, and I'm wrecked for a few days. So something maybe about when you're limited on volume, you inherently find like another gear that maybe, it's not that you were sandbagging before when you're doing 6 sets of a muscle group, but it's like when you only have 2, you know, you really have to bring it for those 2 sets. And there's something really kind of invigorating about that as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's almost verbatim how my workouts are. And I see it's 1 push, 1 bilateral push, 1 bilateral pull, 1 lower body, and then 1 delts. I'm completely foregoing biceps and triceps for this. The only downside of what I'm doing is I know that you have a more workout split over more days. I only have 3 across the week. The downside is there's only 3 leg exercises. And like, I don't mind what that volume ends up doing, just given my goals and whatever. I don't mind, but it does limit like the movement patterns I can do. It's like, if I do a leg extension, a ham curl, and a hack, I'm missing something hip extension-y, you know? And so I've debated making it 6 workouts over 2 weeks, something like that. And or having shorter mesocycles where every 3 or 4 weeks those leg exercises swap. But Yeah, volume wise, I'm fine with it, but I am thinking like no matter what three leg moves I pick, I'm missing something, and that's not the end of the world. If you know that, you rotate that each mesocycle. Fine. I'm even thinking, if why not just pick? The thing is, I don't have another three bilateral push pulls and delts. So you could just say week A is the same upper body stuff with leg exercises A, and then week B is the same thing with three different leg exercises, and that's kind of what I'm playing with, because then I can do my hack and a hip extension. And a Bulgarian, some lengthened glute potentially. Yes. So yeah. Cool.
Yeah, I would say in mine, the one thing I feel like I'm missing is the single leg squat, because I have the pendulum, I have the hack, and I have a leg curl, and I have an RDL. So I'm actually not even doing leg extension. So I guess in theory, I'm missing leg extension and I'm missing a single leg squat. So it's tough when you're doing the full body setup like that. You're going to have to forego something. And I think your idea of kind of rotating them every 3 to 6 weeks or something makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. We're going to chat. This is sometimes what happens where like like you and Aaron will talk about something and I'll listen to the podcast and I'm like, tap me in, bro. Like tap me in. let me in there. And I'm like, I'll just have Brian on the podcast to just have the same podcast, but just over here. But yeah, you guys had a podcast essentially, and you correct me if I'm wrong. I didn't pull up the title of it, but essentially it was answering the question, do volume requirements go up over the training career? Is that right?
Yeah, that wasn't the title, but it's close enough. Yeah.
Cool. And so that's what we're going to answer today. And I have been thinking about this like for the last, I don't know, 48 hours pre-podcast. And as I often do, I'll get in the weeds over a question, but then I'll like take a step back and I'm like, okay, but like, who's this actually helping? Like, what actual questions are we going to be hoping to answer? And so I want to tease those now for the listener who's like, maybe doesn't know, even know what that statement even means. Do volume requirements go up over the training career? And kind of like practically, if you're out there listening, the questions that we'll hope to answer ultimately when I'm done is this idea of like, two things that I think are important. One is, as you're going through your training career and things slow down, does that mean you need to do more volume? A secondary question is, would you benefit from more volume? So would you benefit and should you do? Slightly different questions. And then the third is, if I do less than I'm doing right now, is that maintenance volume? Essentially, the people out there that are going from like, oh, I'm going from 4 days a week to 3 days a week, because I've been doing that for so many years, is 3 days a week now not enough? Like those sorts of discussions of, I think, you know, we're going to talk about how we might write out the graph of volume requirements over the training career. But like, practically speaking, I think people fall into a camp of like, okay, does that mean the longer I've trained, I need to do more and more and more and more to keep growing? We're going to answer that question. And the other one is, if I ever decide I want to do a little less than I've been doing, what should my expectations be? And there's multiple contexts. We'll see how many of those contexts we can address when we get there. But I asked for, well, let's before we even start, I want to use the word volume as number of hard sets. But let's just take a brief pause to talk about why volume or number of hard sets has some pretty immense limitations as a proxy for stimulus.
Yeah, you're going to see how I decided to answer that in my graph when we share those.
Cool.
So yeah, I mean, there's a ton of limitations in volume being perceived as stimulus. And so one being that a hard set could be anything from 0 to 3, 4, or 5 reps from failure, but 3 reps from failure does not equal failure when you're counting volume. That's a very different stimulus that you're receiving. Second would be the exercise selection that you choose and how biased that those exercises are to the muscle tissue that you're trying to take to a discernible amount of volume or stimulus. So I think those would be the two main primary ones. I'm sure I'm missing some. Go ahead.
Those are the two big ones for me. Is proximity to failure, intensity, and exercise selection. It's like exercises aren't all created equal in terms of stimulus. So you could do a single set of leg extensions or a single set of hack squat, and you know, all things being equal, the hack squat per set will provide more hypertrophy. Maybe people are like, oh, if you lay back in the leg extension, all right, whatever. And then it's, you know, a hack squat at 5 RIR and a hack squat at 0 RIR, a hack squat at 0 RIR, a single set is going to provide more hypertrophy. So number of sets, it's like, you know, if someone's like, hey, I'm doing 100 sets per week. I'm like, I have no idea what kind of results you're going to get, because you could be doing a bunch of really far from failure, foofy band exercises, or you could be doing a lot of length and overload stuff, mega close to failure. So when we talk about volume, the definition being number of hard sets, has a lot of limitations. You and I have talked about that quite a bit on the podcast, but I think people get, like, just telling me how much you did. It's like, I studied for 5 hours, and I'm like, okay, like, what'd you do? And you were like, yeah, I went to this music festival and I sat in the middle of the crowd and I had my book open. It's like, that's not the same 5 hours of studying as like, I'm in the library, like hopped up on caffeine and Adderall, and I'm crushing, you know, I'm seeing, you know, seeing sounds, you know? So like, so just understanding that that doesn't, the thing is, we're having that kind of, we're beginning with that caveat. That's sort of why it's not all created equal. But we're going to, ironically, we're going to move forward still using number of hard sets. And I would say the reason I feel okay doing that is because I think most programs written by people who have some semblance of knowledge about what they're doing get most things right in terms of exercise selection and intensity. So like my example of like, you could be doing 100 banded lateral walks. It's like, yeah, but nobody's actually doing that program. So like nobody listening to this interested in hypertrophy is doing that program. So like if you're doing my program or Brian's program or your program or Paragon or you know, another program written by somebody who has a friggin' half a clue about what they're doing, the exercise selection is probably good enough for us to use sets. And the prescribed intensity is probably good enough for us to say, you know what, we can look at number of sets as a loose proxy from a discussion standpoint. I think, you know, what people end up actually doing in terms of intensity, there's probably a gap between prescription and execution. But prescription-wise, I think most programs get the intensity and the exercise selection close enough that we can look at number of sets when we talk about volume. Fair?
Yeah, no, I think that's fine. I mean, we assume that they're all between 0 and 2 RIR or something like that.
Sure. Awesome. So before we hopped on the other day, I asked you to do a little homework, and I said I'd like to draw two graphs, or at least two lines on the same graph. And we're gonna share screen. This will be up on YouTube for people that want to listen to it. But if you're not, most people listening on audio, we'll try and articulate what we've drawn. The y-axis is going to be volume. So like, how many sets do I need to do? And you know, we could be like volume per session or volume per week or per muscle or total volume of everything. I'm saying volume per muscle group per week, I guess, which could yeah. change depending on muscle, but we are just looking at this as a graph. We're not actually putting numbers on the graph. The shape, the slope of the graph is really what's interesting for today's discussion, not necessarily putting numbers on it, which we will talk about if we have time towards the end. So the y-axis is volume. So the higher the graph goes, the more volume we're saying somebody needs. And the x-axis, as we go towards the right, would be, let's say, over time or training age, training experience. And so if you were to draw a line going kind of linearly on a 45 degree angle up and to the right, what you'd be saying is the longer you train, the more volume you need on a linear basis. So linearly over time, you need more volume. If I've been training for 1 year, I need one volume. Every 2 years, I need two volume, and three, and it just scales linearly over time. And we are not saying that. I know that neither of us will have said that, but I am interested in what your graph looks like. And we're gonna do like a 1, 2, 3. I'll share. Can we even do that? Can we both share screen? Whatever. You'll hold yours up. Go ahead.
I'll just hold it up. Yeah. So also, but just a caveat before we do this is, you asked me for two graphs. I wrote four graphs.
Okay. I wrote like 10 graphs before I realized like what I felt about this. What I will say is, ultimately, for those who are familiar with the nomenclature, ultimately what we're graphing is MEV and MRV over the lifespan, which it took me a second to realize that's what I was asking for, is like minimum effective volume. Like basically the volume so I asked Brian for two graphs. He wrote four graphs. He's trying to outdo me here. But basically the volume needed to make any gains at all. Right. So how much volume do I need to do to grow at all? Which, yeah, that's minimum effective volume. And then volume needed to optimize gains, which could be MAV, MRV, whatever. So basically one line on the graph, which is do I need to do more over time? What does the graph look like to make any gains at all? And what does that same graph look like when you put a line on it describing the amount of volume you need to do to optimize gains? So why don't you show us what you did, and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, I'm going to show you the first two right now, which have volume on the y-axis, and then my other two graphs have a different thing on the
Cool.
y-axis.
Awesome. On screen, for those of you guys can't see, are the two graphs. And interesting. So let's talk through. Okay, so let's talk through making any gains at all. Ooh, cool. I see. All right, I'll shut up because there's people who are not listening. Describe what you did for the volume required to make any gains at all over the lifespan.
Yeah, so any gains at all, it starts really low when you're a beginner because any sort of volume that you're doing should be effective. Yours demonstrates it similarly. And then around the 3 to 6 year mark, I have volume peaking where you're probably doing the most volume as you're experimenting and recoverability is still good, but you still have plenty of gains to make. And then as you become more precise with your volume, over time, your volume needs potentially drop a little bit as you get into the later stages. So if we were to put numbers to it, you know, my any gains at all, I have it about 5 or 6 working sets per muscle group per week for the 3 to 6 year period. And then I have it dropping down to 3-ish sets per muscle group per week as you become more advanced and more precise with your programming and effort and precision and all of that stuff.
Cool. So the difference in our graph is I think my brain shifted immediately, like upon writing it. And I think I wrote my MEV graph or the volume needed to make any gains at all. I think mine is depicting amount of stimulus. If I were to write, and then ironically, my MRV is actually, I think, also stimulus. And so if I were to go with sets, I would agree. So the important parts of this graph is that you are saying when somebody first starts out, as they get into training over the first block of time from day zero through a somewhat arbitrary amount of time, they will require more to grow. And that is factually one part of this graph that I think everybody must agree with, which is if you've never lifted weights before, you don't need very much to grow. But as you gain in those adaptations of building muscle and strength, you will have to do more to continue to build muscle. I think that to a point. So we see a good depiction of this is like we see people who untrained individuals walk on an incline and they get leg hypertrophy, right? Like the truth is like that's just not going to cut it. Like you and I can't walk on an incline and get leg hypertrophy. And so this graph begins with an upward trend no matter what. If you're drawing this, the amount of gains, the amount of volume you need to make any gains at all must begin from ground zero, very, very little, and go up for a certain period of time. Now, there's an inflection point in your graph, which I would admit, I'll explain the difference between our two graphs, but if we're just talking set number, I agree with the shape of your graph and I would double down on it
Let
100%.
me
Yeah.
show you the second set of graphs that I made because I graphed them as stimulus, which look a lot more similar to
Cool,
yours.
cool, cool. Let's see it. Yes, cool. So let's do that afterwards. I want to talk about volume as number of sets, and then we'll talk about stimulus. I'll bring that one up as well. So the shape of Brian's graph for the amount of volume you need to make any gains at all goes up in the beginning, at a certain point, plateaus a little bit, and then actually there's an inflection point where it starts to go down, and the volume requirements as per number of sets you'd have to do actually goes down. So the interest that we have two parts of this. We have one that goes up. I think we can all agree it goes up because when you're a rank beginner, you can do very little and grow, but that doesn't last forever. You have to do a little bit more. But at some point, that plateaus a little bit. But the more interesting part of this is why we would both agree that the number of sets you'd have to do as you get more advanced and build more muscle actually might go down. Now, the actual slope in the geometric terminology of like how steep that curve is in how steep that curve is and what the numbers of sets are is really tough to discern. But I think the interesting part here is we both agree that there's a point in your training age where you actually don't have to do as many sets to keep making gains. So I'd love for you to speak to why you made that decision.
Yeah, I think it's because of the reason that you see on my stimulus graph that the slope just keeps going up. I mean, if you're looking at my stimulus graph on YouTube right now, I'm holding it up. What you'll see is that I have that slope going up forever. It goes up for eternity because if you want to continue making gains, you need to figure out how to create more stimulus over time. The thing is that stimulus doesn't correlate to number of sets that you do because you get better at going there. You get better at frying a specific area of your muscle tissue. The way in which I can execute and destroy my quads from one set of hack squats now is completely different to what would happen if I did sets of hack squats 15, 20 years ago. And so the stimulus that I'm able to achieve is higher on fewer sets. And that is exactly why I wrote the graphs the way that I did.
Yeah, so you're, what you're saying is, if in the beginning volume goes up because you need more stimulus to grow, but as training age goes on, as you get more experience lifting, you actually get better at getting more stimulus per set, such that volume in terms of set number goes actually down. If I were to do the amount of sets that I used to do, let's say in my first 2 or 3 years of lifting, when I would just go there every day after school, I would be absolutely obliterated because of the skill that I've gained through a decade of lifting, of being able to get more out of each set. And that's probably, if you had to put a reason why that is, it's probably just increased neurological efficiency, there like your ability to train close to failure without technique breakdowns, your psychological gains of being able to actually push yourself close to failure, what that feels like, you know. So there's just like mental gains of I'm, go ahead.
The fatigue cost also, like the cost to the fatigue of nervous system and systemically of doing a hard set is more because you're lifting more weight. A 400-pound bench press is significantly more fatiguing than a 200-pound bench press, even if both of them are just one rep to failure. You have to go there mentally and psychologically. I mean, there's so many factors that go into it. Just lifting heavier weights is going to be more fatiguing and more stimulative, so you just won't be able to do quite as many sets.
Yeah, I'm going to draw your graph on top of my graph because I think it paints an interesting picture of what it's saying, which is, if you see stimulus requirements go up, if you look at right, something like that, and this is, let's say, vol MEV, this is really MEV stim, and this is really MEV in terms of sets, let's say. What we're really saying is that stimulus, the amount of stimulus you need is goes up forever. I don't think it goes up linearly. It's hard to say if it goes up linearly or more of an asymptote, but like the amount of stimulus you need to get better at something always goes up forever. Like it's just, that is just like not a controversial statement. If you want to get better at Spanish, you need to keep pushing yourself to do something more challenging at Spanish. And it's not, you know, you can't, like, if you want to get better at math, you're not just like sitting at home doing basic addition all day. Like, you need to continue to push yourself to get better at something forever. But what we're saying is, over the training career, your skill of getting more out of less goes up so that you don't need as much. And what you just mentioned is that not only do you not need as much because you're getting more out of each thing, is that you're actually, it is true that the stronger you are, the more fatiguing everything is. And so, like, a guy who's walking to the gym can only squat the bar. Him going to failure on his squat and you going to failure on a 400-pound squat, you might say, well, relatively, you both, it was the same amount of difficulty for both of you. Systemically, it's not the same. It is more fatiguing to use more weight. It's not a one-to-one in terms of relative effort. There is an increase. I don't think it's linear as well, but I think it is, in an absolute sense, more fatiguing to lift more weight. So you're assuming over the training age, you're getting stronger. You're getting stronger, which means everything is more fatiguing. You're getting more skilled, so you can get more out of everything you do. And so the number of sets that you need to do goes down, and the number of sets that you can do goes down. And so both of those have pushed that graph downward. Now, the shape of your volume to optimize gains looks the same. The shape, general shape. You can talk to me about what you did here, but I would agree that when we're talking sets, these two graphs should look, the shape of them should look the same.
That was my thing. I made it the same. I just increased the number of sets across the board, and then I was looking at it and I was like, that doesn't account for all the individual variants that can occur at the later stages of training age. And so then I wrote another line and I was like, that still doesn't account for it. And I wrote another line. And eventually, before I knew it, I had five lines demonstrating five potential branches of different volumes that might be optimal for the individual. And I know that wasn't part of the assignment, but that's just the way that I needed to kind of put it out there for my brain for it to make sense.
One of the things I did with my graphs, again, poorly drawn for the difference of you using volume, using stimulus, is actually, I think the gap between MEV and MRV actually goes up at some point, meaning like in the beginning, if I'm thinking practically, you get like the least that you need to do to make gains. Maybe that's not true. What I was thinking was like you get so sore from anything you do when you're a newbie. Like it's unfair to say that like you can train that much when you're a newbie. Like in theory you can, but in practicality, I remember getting so sore from everything I did. Now I can already feel that there's a lack of logic there somewhere because the truth is that means you just everything comes down in a similar relative sense, but almost like I almost felt like there was in the beginning, a tighter window between what would cause growth and what I could handle. Any logic there?
Of what could cause growth and what you could handle.
It's almost like what could cause growth was maybe me going to the gym once or twice a week, but three
But you
times a
could
week
handle
would
more.
probably be the max because I was so sore when I would go. Now you could say, well, you could have just been training further from failure and not being an idiot and you wouldn't have been so sore and that your window would look more like what it would look like over the lifespan. But I guess that is just a lived experience of once or twice as a brand new beginner, you make gains. But like, if you're like, tell me, okay, go four times. I could not have gone four times because, you know, I couldn't even straighten my arm after the first or second time doing bicep curls.
What if it's a body part split though, instead of a full body
Yeah,
style
true,
approach?
true, true,
So I mean,
true.
it really, I think that you have to kind of play that in there as well. I guess like when you're a newbie, a lot of people go like anecdotally, a lot of people catch the bug and then before they know what they're doing, they're still a newbie and they're doing 20 sets per body part. And so I think what you're seeing with those people is that their efforts and their ability to actually like stimulate target musculature is so low that like they're doing the work, they're getting sore, they're getting stimulus, everything is working because they're a newbie, and it doesn't really matter that they've done so much volume because the actual stimulus that they're achieving is still low. And that's I think like when you're writing these graphs, it's almost impossible to write it with sets and have any accuracy just because you don't know how people are implementing those sets, especially as a newbie. But writing it as stimulus kind of covers all bases. And you're like, yeah, that person could be doing 20 sets as a newbie, but their stimulus is still low.
I want to think of okay, so if you're an audio listener or you're just trying to find a take home from this. There's two, in my opinion, you can add two important takeaways is that as you begin training, three, let's say, as you begin training from ground zero, you can do quite little and still make, you know, really solid gains. But in that initial phase, if you choose to do start with very little, that doesn't last forever and volume requirements will go up to a point. But once you're in that intermediate, again, putting numbers on this stuff, always like people are, well, I don't know if I'm an intermediate. I don't know, 5 years into training, let's say, 5 years into like semi-logical training, it's unlikely that that graph of required sets continues to go up. In all likelihood, it goes down, the volume that you would require. And so there's people out there, if you're doing very little or you're new to training, it's possible that you could slash should do more and you'd see better gains. But if you've been at this for a while and you're not doing low volume, let's say if you're training at, you know, 3 to 5 times a week and you've been doing that for a long time, it's less clear that you'd get better gains with more volume and potentially unlikely that you could survive it depending on, you know, your recovery variables, how hard you're training, and if you are training 3 or 5 days a week, that would make a difference.
Yeah, I'll also add that I think a really good self-test as to whether you are good at creating stimulus is to actually lower your volumes. If you're one of those people that's an intermediate and you're up at 15, 20 sets of body part and you're just like, well, I got to keep continuing to create stimulus or I'm not going to make gains, so I got to keep doing 15 to 20 sets. Like a good self-test would be drop your volume down. Because it's really likely that if you're put in a position where you only have X amount to do and X is 100% less than what you were doing or 50% less or whatever, you're going to find a way to get better at your exercises because you have less of them to do. Your focus will increase, your work effort will likely increase. And over the course of a mesocycle doing lower volumes than what you're used to, I think you'll find a way to realize that you're able to achieve more stimulus than you thought you could.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that definitely. I see a lot of intelligent people in the space that are doing things that are different. And you can take the RP guys as the highest potential volume group, and you can take the lower volume, higher intensity crowd, and there's a stark difference between the prescriptions, right? There's a smart dude that I think is intelligent in the space, has a group program. Sometimes I see the programs he'll post on social media, and it's like five working sets for a workout. You know, it's a warm up, work set, warm up, work set. And it's like four or five exercises, and then they move on, do that four times a week. That could be on a working set basis, like a quarter of the volume of, you know, I have people, I just took on a one-on-one client who came from another one-on-one coach and was like, we are doing less than half the sets right now. And I think like there's just, I almost, and I was like, how long were those workouts taking you? And they were like 70, 60, 70 minutes. I'm like, how long are our workouts taking? Like 60, 70 minutes. And clearly the difference is rest periods potentially. And I almost feel like I don't want to throw the whole book out and be like, just solve for time. Like you just go in there and like you could do a little bit more set, a little bit less rest, you know? And I'm like, I wonder what that other workout is. And so I investigated, and it's like three warm-ups with like a minute and a half between warm-ups, and then 2 minutes after the last warm-up, and then taking that set to the absolute house, and then partials, and then a drop set. And it's like, okay. Like this is a little muddier. This isn't like one traditional working set anymore. And I just feel like there's such a wide range of available volume intensity distributions that like if you're doing something kind of logical and spending 45 to 60 minutes in the gym and you have like a somewhat logical distribution of intensity, rest, volume, exercise selection, like it's hard to parse out. I would almost be like, pick the one you enjoy the most because you're going to make gains with all of them. If somebody is understanding the interplay between those variables and putting you to work for 60 minutes a couple times a week, several times a week, I think that's, and I don't want to poo-poo that. I don't want to lack the nuance to detect which of those might be best. But man, if you told me you're look at you, and I want to take you as an example because I think you have this in Paragon, I'm sure all the time. I have this in my group where somebody's doing your 4 day a week program and they're nervous about going down to the 3 day a week program because they're now doing less than they were before. And obviously you can educate them of like, yeah, but less than you were before is still above the threshold needed to make gains. And so could you speak to that scenario a little bit for people that are like, oh, I was doing X and now I'm doing a little bit less? Because I feel like that's where people are like, oh, I've been training for a long time and four times a week. Brian and Jordan said I need more stimulus as I go. Like, does that mean what I'm currently doing is my minimum now that I've been doing it for a long time?
Yeah, I mean, who where are you in your journey? Like, can you be creating more stimulus through less volume? Because it's likely that if you're in that intermediate, late intermediate stage, maybe even early advanced, that you can still create more stimulus and lower your volume at the same time. So it's that breaking of the line between stimulus and volume, which we've demonstrated on our graphs, are not actually really linked together over time so much. But yeah, I mean, like, I guess this kind of gets into the question of what is maintenance volume and how low would you have to go for it to be maintenance volume? And then we can, you know, kind of curtail this into that discussion because 33% is the number that always gets thrown out there. Like, yeah, if you're using 12 sets to make gains, then 4 sets and you should be able to maintain. But there's so much ambiguity in there. I actually just had a question in my Facebook group about that today. And there's so much nuance and complexity because, first of all, that is only done over 8 to 12 weeks. It's a college semester. So, yes, 33% is likely going to maintain your gains for 8 to 12 weeks. But how about if that's just your new norm and it's like a year or 2 years or 3 years or whatever? We don't know. Second is it seems like the amount of maintenance volume that you might need to do likely goes up as you're older. So elders who have worse muscle protein synthetic response and things like that potentially have to do more volume. People that are younger and just starting out, like one study was done on newbies who were in college and they only needed 1/9 of the volume.
Yeah.
But again, it was like they were brand new to training, and so any stimulus was going to get them results. They just happened to drop it from 9 sets to 1 set. But that 1 set was still sufficient to get them stimulus because they were still so early on that curve that we demonstrated. And so when I get that question about I'm doing the 4-day program and I want to drop to the 3, it's a whole hodgepodge of that type of response, quoting the maintenance volume research, noting that the 3-day program is likely 85 to 90% of the volume that you would be doing from the 4-day program. And then also peppering in the notion that you could be doing 12 sets to 3 RIR. And when you cut that down to 4 sets, you're doing those 4 sets to failure. That is not 1/3 of the stimulus that you were getting from 12 sets. And so being able to kind of think about it critically from that angle and kind of pull yourself out, look at it wide lens, 4 sets to failure is likely 8 sets to 3 RIR. I mean, you're doing 2/3 of the volume or 2/3 of the stimulus. It's tough to say, but they're not the same. And so that's one of those elements that I think you have to consider as well.
Definitely. I think that there's just a fear of whatever I'm doing is now my minimum. And I think that that's not a fair assumption in all cases. I think that when it's born out of somebody who feels like they already haven't been making the progress that they want, I understand where they're coming from, where it's like, well, it's like someone who's like I haven't been losing weight. You're telling me to increase calories. It's like, that's the opposite direction. You know, it's like, this is like where it's like, well, I haven't been making gains and you're telling me it's all going to be fine when I go down. It's I think that like, three times a week for 60 minutes with enough intensity and exercise selection is just above the required stimulus for growth for like almost everybody, almost for the whole lifespan. So if you're like nervous about going down to 3 days a week, you want to hedge that, you want to make sure that things are good, train fucking hard. The 3 times a week, 60 minutes. Bring the intensity, train really hard. I promise you, it's a ton of stimulus, probably enough for you to keep making gains for forever until, just you get old and muscle degradation outpaces any potential growth. But that to me, if I look at my 3 day week program, I'm like, if you took all those sets to failure, it would be too hard. It would be too hard. And so like you by training 3 days a week, you already have the option to go too hard, which means you already have the option to make some gains. I just feel like people get used to doing something for a certain time and they do any less and they assume that that's going to mean I will regress.
Well, I mean, I can use myself as example number one here because literally for years, the last 5 years, I've been training 4 to 5 days a week, 60 to 75 minutes a session, 8 to 12 sets per muscle group per week, like right in the range of, the evidence-based guidelines. That would be a total of, I don't know, 75, 80 sets a week, something along those lines across the whole body. And now this new program that I'm embarking on is 2 times a week full body with a total of 8 sets per session.
Yeah,
So
same.
16 sets per week. It's 1/5 of the volume of what I was doing. 1/5. This is below what would be considered in the literature to be maintenance volume. Like I should, by all accounts, lose muscle over this next 6 months or whatever of this new program that I'm doing. And I do not expect to lose muscle over that period of time doing this new program. In fact, I would be surprised if I don't gain strength in hypertrophy rep ranges and continue to progress. Whether that correlates to me gaining or losing muscle tissue is tougher to say, but gaining strength in hypertrophy rep ranges is a pretty good proxy. It's about as good as we have. And so, yeah, 1/5 of the volume. Let's find out what happens.
I will say, in my personal experience, you and I have probably sat down for a podcast over the last few years, and I spoke about my early phase reductions in volume from the 5 day a week, 90 minutes to I'm at, 90 total minutes now. Also, I mean, I'm doing more volume than you, I guess. I'm 3 days a week, eight working sets, 24 total sets per week. What I would say is my experience was when I initially dropped the volume. From let's say five, and I'm using minutes because I don't recall the number of sets I was doing, but just the assumption of sets and rest periods in a roughly normal range, 5 by 90 minutes, I probably dropped down to less than half of that, maybe 4 times a week, maybe 12 working sets. And I was under the impression I was not losing muscle, and I was really hyped, and I wasn't losing muscle. And your question is, the question you posed about some of this maintenance volume research is like, how long are these studies? 8, 12 weeks. I lost muscle over the next 2 years. What I would say though is I lost a little bit of muscle, and then it quickly then became maintenance volume at that level of muscularity. And so I've maintained where I'm currently at for a couple of years, but I definitely lost muscle that I was undetectable for quite some time. But absolutely, I did. But it's tricky because your maintenance volume does go up. So if you're mega, mega muscular, like your maintenance volume is higher than somebody less muscular. If you're mega, mega muscular, been training for 10 years, it's going to be higher. And so, yeah, that's why it's good to use a percentage. But I still would put that out there of like how long it might take for those the loss of muscle tissue to manifest. I definitely, if we're being honest, I'd love to say that I am doing 3 hours of cardio extra a week and one fucking fifth of the volume as I was 5 years ago, and I've lost no muscle. That's just not true. I've lost muscle, but I lost to a point where it quickly became maintenance volume, didn't lose as much, and am, by all accounts, as muscular as I'll ever need to be for life training this way, and super pumped about that. But I'm curious if you are feeling an acute reduction in fatigue, which is making you perform better. I don't wish this upon you at all. I hope you get super fucking jacked, but I'm curious if you're like, yeah, I have this acute increase, and I'm sure, I think Aaron brought up the same thing, which is like, hey, I'm wondering if you're just performing better right now. I'd be curious what happens. And again, hopefully you get super jacked and none of, you don't lose any muscle.
No, I mean, I'm sure that that's a piece of it. Like working out twice a week, there's the psychological freshness that you bring to each session, along with, yeah, potentially less actual fatigue on the body from having 2 to 3 full days between sessions. But the counter argument there would be that I'm actually doing more cardio because I'm training in the weight room less. And so one of the things I've been doing is pushing my cardio into like the 7 to 8 hour range per week. And my zone two rides are now about 2 hours long each, and I'll do 3 of those a week, and then I'll have an intensity session. And so like I'm literally working out every day. My cardio days, I'm working out an average of 90 to 120 minutes, and my lifting days are 45 minutes. But the actual amount of time that I'm spending exerting myself with a elevated heart rate is higher now than it was when I was doing 5 times a week lifting and doing 90-minute sessions. So it's hard to say, is my fatigue lower? Like, yeah, I'm doing zone two. I'm not like slinging heavy weights. Like, it's probably a little less fatiguing, but like, it's still fatiguing in some ways. I'm also torn on this idea of whether I've lost muscle over the last year or two from stepping up cardio and gradually dialing back training, especially since March. I would say I've really dialed back training a lot. Like, when I look at myself, I don't really feel like I've lost muscle, but I see myself every day. It's hard to say. Aaron proposed that, at some point at the end of this, I diet down to like 185, where I do my photo shoots and do a photo shoot after training 2 times a week full body for a year and see what things look like. Like that potentially gives us the best insight into that. But like I can look back at I did a photo shoot in 2020, 2019, right before the pandemic. And I did the photo shoot at 198 pounds, which is
Holy
the
crap.
same that I am now. And I feel like based on that photo shoot, when I look at myself now, I feel like that's the same. And that was during like peak training time where I was just walking and lifting. So yeah, I mean, it's tough to say. It's ambiguous. I'm also just now embarking on this official 2 times a week program. I was doing 3 times a week for the last 5 months. Maybe the drop to 2 times a week changes things a little bit too. But it's one of the experiments. Like I'm just trying, like I did the one arm experiment. This is just something I want to do. And it's great that it accommodates my life, but it's also something I want to do from an experimental purpose and kind of learn from it and take it from there.
Yeah, I mean, if you're within the margin of error of not being sure if you've lost muscle, then we should be happy with that outcome. If it's like, if I'm not sure, then then you haven't lost enough to make it, a substantial loss. Dude, you got to come over to the 800 meter training, bro. We're doing, two, three sprint workouts a week, half hour sessions, man. It's nice. I got no aerobic capacity anymore, none at all. Yeah, that's funny that I'm Sleep has been pretty good. Emerson's been sleeping well, so I feel like we're gonna gently bring back some distance, train for something in the 10K half marathon range, which just what I mean is that requires some longer workouts. Training for the 800, I'm doing like 24 to 36 minute sessions. Fantastic. Yeah, it's a dream. It's awesome. Yeah.
What's the goal on your 800?
I don't have one yet. What I will say, just for fun, just out of an interesting thing, is like, so one of the differences between biking and running is is there's more technique involved in running. I mean, there's not neither are like mega technical, but like cycling, one of the benefits is lower technique, lower impact. Like it's like more of an output sport, right? I mean, like the guy who has got the best output is got the, you know, is the best at it, right? And improvements in running economy that have come from this last 10 weeks of running faster really have made a difference across all time domains. So for the last, like we said, 12 weeks, we're going to spend 12 weeks on a time domain and then race it. And then another 12 weeks, 12 weeks just being long enough to gain some of the specific adaptations. But doing a lot of the sprint work, I know it sounds like a stupid thing that you'd not like doing a lot of fast running has made me a lot better at doing a lot of fast running, but it's also made me better at periodically we've thrown in some moderate distance work. And it is amazing what the adaptations of the sprint work have given me for all domains, which is just like lower limb stiffness, just like leg turnover, a little bit of this like bounce that you feel. I remember telling Alex early on, I was like, dude, I have no bounce. I have no hop. We were doing plyometrics. I'm like, I'm an anvil in the ocean. Like when I go out and I run, I'm like, I don't have any of this like light on my feet. I watch people like real runners. They look like they're gliding, man. Just like they have this bounce, this air. And that's been really cool. I did it. We did a moderate intensity run the other day and I was like, dude, I got bounce. I got hop. And I feel like that has come from some of the faster running. But yeah, mostly have enjoyed having really, really short workouts.
Yeah, there's a lot of science about how that faster pace, shorter interval type work increases neurological efficiency. And then you see that transfer into the longer distances. And so bikers do the same thing. It's
Totally.
like, yeah, we'll do 30 to 60 second all out intervals where the pedal stroke is, it has to be optimized because of the speed at which you're going. And then that transfers to your longer, slower work, which you're seeing as well with your running. And I think that's also why, like, I'm actually a decent runner until I get fatigued and then my feet start sliding around all over the place. But like, because I've done so much sprint training that I have a good gait, it just breaks down quickly as I fatigue.
Yeah, definitely. Turning back to some volume stuff, let's see if we don't go too long here. What do you do with? I'll ask you two questions. We'll answer them over time. You don't need to answer them all right away. I'm going to start with the first one. What do you do with the volume recommendations out there? And we're going to ultimately maybe discuss how you might communicate it differently if someone asks, which is cool because I know you get these questions in your Facebook chat at some point, which is like, oh, I saw that 52-week study, or I heard 10 to 20 sets per week, or how, what do you personally, let's say when you program for people, how do you, when you program for people or when they ask you about them, are you ever utilizing those numbers in any way at all?
Am I utilizing them? No. They're just as a way of saying, like, hey, evidence shows that you should be somewhere between 10 to 20 sets, but most of these sets are done to 2 RIR, that they're counting all compound movements as direct arm work. So your pull-ups and your put bench presses count as tricep and bicep work as well. So there's a lot of like kind of caveats that go in there. But no, when I begin writing a program for somebody, it's like one of the questions I ask on the intake, which I'm sure you do too, is what have you been doing prior? Like what was your workout routine like prior? How many sets were you doing? Blah, blah, blah. You'll want to see some videos too. And so once you have that knowledge of what they were doing prior, then the next question I ask is what training that you've done over the past has been most successful for you. And whether some of them will be like it was the program, if it probably wasn't the program they were just doing, or they wouldn't be coming to me for coaching. But at some point they had really good success somewhere. And so I'm like, well, we should, think about what that number was and potentially target that as like a decent starting range. In most cases, that ends up putting us somewhere between like 6 to 10 sets per muscle group per week to start. And
Can I pause you and just talk about so like and then we've talked about this and I've talked about it and you've talked about it, just like these these volume recommendations that come out from these studies, there's a huge, huge problem, like we talked about, which is how hard were they training? What exercise were they doing? And more powerful to me than any of them is how were they quantifying that volume? So what you had mentioned, like, hey, if they did a set of leg press, I mean, Schoenfeld, you know, I think 2016, they count a leg press as one set of quads, one set of glutes, and one set of hamstrings. And so, like, you know, I might say, well, you know, if your feet are at the bottom, it's one set of quads and nothing else. If your feet are at the top, it's, you know, one set of glute, half set of quad or something, you know, whatever. My point is a set of pull-ups, is that a set of, I mean, there's so much issue with that because a set of pull-ups in these studies is like one set of back, which is already like, back is a right. ton of muscles, and then also one set of biceps equally. Now, so my question to you is, what do you do with those volume recommendations? It's like, have you ever counted somebody's volume in a spreadsheet to see how many sets per week they were doing? And I don't want to put you on the spot. And, yeah, okay. You said no. I said no. Isn't that interesting? Like, what is the point of these studies then if two people who I believe run fantastic programs, you know, are a good source of information on hypertrophy, aren't using the ultimate recommendation that these studies are giving? Like, why is there something they could do to these studies that would be better from an application perspective? Like, I'm not actually sure I've ever learned. I don't want to be a dick about that, but I just don't know if I've ever been like, wow, this really changes the game in terms of volume recommendations.
Yeah. I mean, so on episode 100 of my podcast, it was an episode on evidence-based nihilism. And I put a lot of prep work into going over, I don't know, 4 to 6 different studies. And in a number of these studies, I had the individual data of what each person responded to best, or where their gains come from, et cetera, et cetera. They had a study where they individualized volume, and it was one leg was performing a nominal 22 sets of leg extensions, and another leg was performing 20% more than what they were doing prior. And you look across the board at what people achieved the best results, and it like ranges from like 6 or 8 sets all the way up to like 48 sets or something like that. And so you have such disparity between where individuals fall that, yeah, you look at the averages, and the averages are, hey, 10 to 20 sets is like a really good place to be for most people. And I find that to be pretty decent advice for intermediates. When we're talking about on the graph, that part of the graph where it goes up and it's the highest point of your training career is intermediate. That's where most people are that are following programs. Most people are right there smack in the middle of intermediate. And so giving them a prescription where you expect that they're probably not going to absolute failure on every set, because that's also what the evidence does not have you failing on every set when you're doing 10 to 20 sets. You're understanding that is spread across all muscle groups that are being claimed as targeted. So, man, if I'm organizing a routine, it's likely going to have 4 sets of direct biceps work, maybe 5, because you're also getting biceps work from all of the back pulling that you're doing. Same with triceps, same with delts for the most part, like front delts, there might be 2 sets of direct work. If that, it's usually a chest press plus front delt combo. Cause you know, you're going to get both anyways. Lateral delt work, rear delt work falls into back work. So, I mean, you have all of these kind of factors playing in. And when you actually look at that and all of the evidence and what 10 to 20 sets actually represents, it's actually a lot less volume than what people actually think they need to be doing, where they think it's 10 to 20 sets direct for each muscle group. Like, oh, my biceps need 15 sets and my triceps need 50 sets, but I also need to do 15 sets of back and 15 sets of chest and 15 sets of quads and 15 sets of hamstrings. And that is just nutty. I mean, that is so much volume. So a lot of what we're doing is trying to start someone at a volume that I think forces them to optimize their stimulus. And I talked about that in the beginning, where if people just lowered their sets and did half of what they were doing, they might find that they're able to go deeper and get more because they're doing less. And so I like to try to start people there. And as needed, we can increase volume if it demonstrates it as a necessity at that point.
Yeah, I want to triage. How much time you got?
Yeah, whatever. I already did my cardio. We're fine.
Okay. We won't go too long. I want to triage in a second what you would do to somebody who says they're not they want to make gains faster, whether they're not making any gains at all or whatever. They're like, hey, I'd like to make more gains. I don't know if I've ever written a program for a one-on-one client that didn't begin with the question of how many days can you realistically train? How long do you realistically have to train? Let's build that many effective workouts in with that kind of time cap per session that reflects the muscle groups you want to grow, you know, in relation to the, how important they are to you. It's like very, like, I'm not saying that that's all there is, because there are people out there that are like, I'll do what it takes to optimize gains. Totally, 100%. But I do find interesting that the diminishing returns beyond 4 days a week are probably so great that 4 days a week is such a sweet spot of near optimal gains that once you're training 4 days a week, and we'll talk about it in a second, it's really hard for me, like doing more work falls really far down my list of suggestions, which I want to come to now, which is like, hey, Brian, you know, I've been, I'm not seeing over the last year the results that I want. Let's paint a more descriptive picture, because let's add a little context. I've been training for 2 years and my progress has stalled out. And I'd like to make better gains. I'm interested in what questions you'd ask me.
Yeah, what was your prior program looking like? Like, well, how many days per week was it? How many sets were you doing?
Let's do that. I'll give you some answers. Let's do it. So I'm doing 3 days a week, full body, and the workouts are about 10 working sets. And you look at the program and you're like, okay, this is like, you know, a solid program, mostly compounds, you know, not foofy band stuff. And I don't mean to be picking on bands. Bands are cool. Bands have a utility. But I'm just saying, like, these are meaningfully stimulative movements. We're doing, you know, 10 working sets in a workout, 3 times a week, and I'm 2 years into my training, and the exercise selection doesn't look like it needs an upgrade.
How much food are you eating?
Yeah, great. Wonderful question. I'm at maintenance.
How do you know that? How long have you been at maintenance?
Yeah, I haven't. My body weight's been the same for the last 6 months or so.
Cool. How many calories are you eating?
Nice. I'm not sure.
Okay. But you're kind of intuitively just maintaining.
Yeah.
Your
okay.
Body,
whatever.
Right?
I'm eating 2,000 calories. Yeah. Let's say 2,000 calories. Let's say I do know. It's, yeah.
All right. Sweet. Are you sleeping well?
Yeah. Sleep is good enough. Let's just say, however I would articulate it, it's good enough that you've now checked it off the list.
Okay. That's cool. Yeah. I mean, it sounds to me like, you know, your program's pretty good. I would love to see some videos of you doing a few of your sets and just kind of, you know, make sure the technique is good and that you're getting close to failure and all that good stuff. So if you can shoot me over a few of those, that'd be great. And then I think a pretty good starting place from a nutrition perspective would be to just try to eat a little bit more. It doesn't have to be a ton more, but, you know, if you can get an extra 200 or 300 calories a day from good quality protein or complex carbohydrate sources, that would likely be a pretty good thing. And then, you know, with training, like your program looks fine. I don't think the program in itself is likely the issue, but I do think there's some kind of finagling that we can do as far as we could split into an upper lower, go to 4 days a week, get you a little bit more targeted volume for some specific muscle tissues. And I think, you know, kind of working through that, checking your form, your technique, making sure you're working hard and kind of upping the food is likely going to get you on the right course.
Yeah, could totally agree with those, that triage. I think, again, this is my bias, but if you're training 2 or 3 days a week, I think the discussion of an additional day has a meaningful impact that it's worth a serious discussion. If you're training 4 days a week, I will go through I will make additional days of training the last option. It's interesting that for me, it's on a knife's edge there. I just feel like practically in our day-to-day life, there is a big difference in how training 5 days a week affects your ability to do anything else in your life versus going from 2 or 3 to 3 or 4. I feel like still is within reason of, again, these are all my biases and my decisions based on, it's just like, you could feel, one could feel totally different than me, but I do feel like it's kind of on a knife's edge of from 4 to 5, I'm so, that triggers me so hard as being protective of your time that I'm going to triage everything else you said. But if I have a client who's training 3 days a week and they're like, I want to make more gains, I'm not saying, cool, we're going to do an extra day. I'm just saying it goes into the top tier of suggestions along with, are you sleeping well? you know, can we get into a surplus? Let's do an intensity check. Let's make sure his exercise selection is optimized. Let's make sure, you know, let's maybe look at per session volume. Maybe you're only doing 30 minutes. And it's like, okay, maybe instead of an extra day, we do an extra 15 minutes in a workout, a couple extra working sets, whatever. But do you feel similarly, or like, do you feel like, hey, four times a week, like I still feel like that extra day is up there in, does that change for you in any way going from 2 to 3, 3 to 4, 4 to 5, 5 to 6?
It becomes less significant the further you go down the chain, right? Like going from 2 to 3 likely makes a bigger difference than going from 3 to 4, which makes a bigger difference than 4 to 5. I would be hard pressed to feel like 4 days is better than 3 if we equal stimulus across the sessions. So if we say we're doing 3 75-minute sessions versus 4 60-minute sessions or whatever the math is, so that those work out 80-minute sessions, whatever it is.
Agreed.
I think that you're basically at the same thing. You're splitting hairs. And then in some ways I almost feel like 3 days is better. And this is a new view for me, but I think that it's likely because you don't have to warm up to get there. You're already warmed up, you're already in it. So it's likely that you can actually fit more effective work into that than potentially with 4 days. I think as you get into the further than 4 days and you're into like 5, maybe 6 days, you're generally going to be looking at somebody that is super advanced, somebody that is trying to specialize and bring up a specific area for the purposes of going on stage, where a lot of the work that they're doing is likely short overloaded exercises that are causing very low fatigue, but are very targeted to specific muscle tissue. And that at least 2 of those 6 days are likely based around those types of movement selection and not dealing with the heavy hitter lengthened compound type movements. So yeah, it's a tool for you to use in your toolbox as needed.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that there's, show me a 5 or 6 day week program and I'll show you a lot of low systemic fatigue exercises that are more on the isolation side, more cable, more short position. In most cases, I don't want to, like, you know, this bodybuilders at their, you know, peak bulk season with nothing else on their plate, you know, sleeping amazing and just sitting, you know, fine.
PPL over 7 days.
Yeah. Sure. Sure. All right. Last point. How might you communicate it differently if someone asks? So if somebody says, hey, like, I just saw this study, it says it's supposed to be doing 10 to 20 sets per muscle group per week. You know, I just counted hours up, let's say, and we're, you know, I used the same thing that they counted. And I'll tell you what I think. I refer back to like the time as long as all things are logical, time is a decent proxy. Meaning, like, if you look at the workouts that people are doing for 10 to 20, like, we're doing similar workouts, maybe with a little bit more intensity and maybe a little bit better exercise selection to make up for less sets. But those people in the 10, 20 sets per week groups are training a similar amount of time that you are. And we've made concessions or trade-offs to do a little bit less volume and a little bit more intensity with a little bit exercise selection and potentially less time training than those groups to make up for that volume. I feel like every time I'm asked that, just fine, by the way, I'm glad people are out there like consuming that information. It's like, yeah, the workouts that those people are doing aren't too dissimilar from ours once you calculate how they calculated and once you make algorithmic adjustments to the stimulus based on quality of exercise selection and proximity to failure, which of course nobody needs to be doing, but like, but you just imagine that that's being done. Is that something that might run through your head as well?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I always use the same sort of thought experiment that you did, you know, with the different algorithmic calculations that may occur. But at the same time, I point out that if you, like, when you add those sets up, most of the programs that I write for the general programming are going to be around that 9 to 12 sets per muscle group per week. The arms, like I said, are going to be more like four to six sets. But because they're jacked up, because, yeah, if you count the back work and the chest work, arms are going to be at like 15 totally. To 18 sets or something like that. But other than arms, like I do think that, you know, for the quads, the hams, the glutes by association. You know, you got to count your squat work and your ham work as glute work as well. And then your chest, your shoulder, and your back work, back lat work, whatever. I think, you know, we're right in the range of that lower end of the 10 to 12. And then when you count that, we're, you know, like you said, we're biasing to better exercise selection and things like that, and proximities to failure and all that stuff. I do think that we're right in that range for the most part. And so yeah, I'm glad people asked that question too. Like, I mean, the evidence is there for a reason, because when we're writing general programs, we're trying to write a program that is going to be the most suitable for, I don't know, 80% of the population. And when you look at the evidence-based research, like 80% of the population fall within that range. And so that's what we prescribe. And that doesn't mean that there aren't outliers. And we get people, I'm sure you get them in your group too, where it's like, man, I've been sore for like the last 3 days. I don't know how I'm going to do this next leg workout. And it's like, well, you either work too hard, or you know, you're a high responder, fast twitch muscle fiber, blah, 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 all the different things. You potentially need to drop a set here, drop a set there. If you have the person on the other side that's like, I'm doing all of this work, but I'm never sore. I feel like I could, you know, handle, I want to add in like 7 sets of additional glute work on leg day or something like that, you know? And you're like, yeah, like maybe, but can I see some
Yeah,
videos?
definitely.
Like, are we sure that we're doing it the way that it's supposed to be done? And so I'll just like raise an eyebrow when people say that they're not getting enough from it, but I'm not as surprised when somebody says that that it's too much. I feel like that's a reasonable thing to say, like, hey, I'm doing 12 sets of quads a week or whatever, and they're really sore. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Like 6 sets of hard quads will do that to you in a session.
Yeah, I'll leave with I want to reiterate something you said, which was actually something that I like, and I might steal at some point, is just maybe periodically pushing yourself to do a low volume program just to gut check your intensity. Like doing a program that is less volume than you were doing before, but is, you know, maybe you have some faith in the person making it that it's like not just like two working sets per workout. Like, all right, like maybe we're underdosing now, but lower volume, like give yourself less to do and say, I'm not allowed to do more, and see what happens to your execution and how close you get to failure.
No, exactly. Like I was surprised personally, because if you watch my videos, like I'm at failure. I'm doing partials when I was doing, say, 6 sets of back in a session. I was there. I was at failure. And yet somehow I was never getting sore from that. I did 2 sets and I got sore.
It's
I just
wild.
like it's blowing my mind,
Yeah.
and I don't really know why, because I did one extra rep, but maybe I was just more engaged, more focused, and more precise with the execution of each of those reps. So
Interesting. Interesting. Awesome. If you've listened this far, you are like a hyper mega nerd. And if you've managed to gain anything from that volume waffle for the last hour, then that's fantastic. Brian, do the thing, leave the thing, tell people, you know, the things.
yeah, you know my things.
Yeah, I got your
Just
things.
check me out.
Yeah. Type my name in somewhere. Think Brian's things are in the caption or the description or whatever. All right, man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate your time. Thanks, bud.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.